So Janice and Jim Leach, is it impolite to call you scary people?
Are we scary people?
Maybe a little bit.
Creepy people, maybe. I hope not scary. Yeah, we certainly have a macabre sense of humor. We're interested in the darker, spookier things.
Now you've set yourself up for this. What's the difference between scary and creepy?
Yeah. So scary, when I think of scares, I think of like traditional horror movies with a jump scare. Where something that's creepy is just that unsettling. I mean, in the literary, they tend to talk about like the new weird, you know, things that are slightly uncanny.
Oh, I like that. The new weird.
Yeah. So the sense that things are slightly just a kilter and gives you that sort of weird, represents the world to you in a slightly off-center way.
What you both are responsible for is the Daily Nightmare and the Quick Shivers anthologies, among other things. So tell our listeners what this is.
Oh, yeah. So Daily Nightmare is a website we started about seven.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. No longer than that. A little longer than that. It was started just the idea that it was a question I had at parties when I saw someone had any good nightmares recently.
Oh, so that was your icebreaker.
It was sort of an icebreaker because I have nightmares a couple times a week, and it was really, really fascinating the responses I got from folks. They were either like, oh, I never have nightmares. Really, you never have nightmares? It's like they had this moral objection to having a nightmare. I said, so you've never had like a dream where something bad happened or...
Is it difficult for people to admit that they're afraid?
Yeah. I thought that was really, really interesting. But then other folks would say, yes, I had a dream within the last couple of months that was really disturbing. And then they usually can remember one from childhood that's like, oh, something that totally freaked them out when they were a kid. And the other cool thing was that everybody says, I can't seem to quite put into words why this was so scary.
Right.
Which I thought was so, what an interesting thing that's nearly ineffable. Anyways, so my, part of my other thought was that because we are so manufactured to feel afraid today, it just seems like back in the days of the Enlightenment, you know, we could be motivated by hope and progress.
Yeah.
And it seems like we're being pushed into being afraid of stuff. And I thought, well, maybe if we came get a little more comfortable being afraid, we might be less easy to be manipulated.
Well, that's a really interesting idea. I had never thought of it that way. So you're kind of desensitizing us to this world of fear that we increasingly live in. Interesting.
Yeah. That was. I mean, the bigger things.
Mm-hmm. Or reminding us to be more analytical about our fears and to face them, to think about the things that really make us afraid, and also how fear is like really common.
Yeah, a
universal experience.
So what you do in these anthologies, they're 100, exactly 100, no more, no less, prose poems about nightmares.
Yeah. And so, we do a couple things, because part of it was we wanted to mix genre, you know, so you get like poets who can write something short or a short story writer who has to learn how to write something that short. We joke that you have to come up with, you can't do it all. You know, you can't tell a story, you can't have mood, can't have,
you can't
setting,
get all the elements.
But get something in there, and focus on some part of one of these nightmares or a nightmare you've had. Mm-hmm. So, and then the other thing we do to it is that we bizarrely typeset the...
I noticed that. Yeah. When I look through these publications, it's not just the prose poem. It's very much the typesetting, the typography you use. Do you do that yourselves or do you bring in a graphic designer?
So we've worked with, for the two of our volumes, we've worked with a graphic designer who we really like. He's got a nice sort of pop cultural sensibility that's very cool.
Right.
Yeah. And part of our idea was that if it's only 100 words, it's going to be really easy to read the stories too quickly. So the typesetting is actually to sort of slow you down and have you puzzle out how the story goes.
So you're doing that on purpose because it did slow me down, definitely.
Oh, yeah, totally, right? Especially the first volume, some folks were like, that was really irritating. Like, yes, that's exactly right.
I'm glad you said that, Jim. There were moments that it's like, okay, you guys are giving me a little bit of a nightmare here. But it's true. It does make you slow down.
There was a movement in typography back in the 90s with Emigre magazine and that was towards highly expressive type that was really hard to read. And that's totally what we're echoing back to. But
And why 100 words? You just found that that worked for you, or how did you come up with that rule?
How did we come up with exactly 100? Because, I mean, flash fiction really, there hadn't been a...
And flash fiction, for those who may not know, flash fiction is, well, it depends on who you talk to. It can be 500 words, it can be 1,000 words, but the whole idea is that it's fiction that's short as a flash.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
A friend of ours runs a, he has a long-running anthology of 55-word stories.
Mm-hmm.
That's just crazy. 100's one thing, but 55, that's just crazy.
Well, if you think of it as a postcard, right? You know, if you write somebody a postcard and you have to make them jealous of your vacation, you have to do it in 55 words.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So also it's the point of like trying to give someone a structure that they have to fit something in. Like it's a challenge. Mm-hmm. So you have to be very purposeful about your language. It does make language become more poetic because you're looking for the right word. You're not just wasting, you know, your 100 words. That's really not very many.
Yeah.
So you have to work hard. And some people really, you know, take the challenge and run with it. Several of our authors have, you know, repeatedly appeared in our publications because they find they like trying to do this. They like trying to make something short and scary and, you know, different. Because you can push the genre limits of what these are. They can be funny or scary or repulsive.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be all those things, but you can decide what you want to emphasize in that short time.
So who do you find submits to Shivers? What kind of people have these nightmares or are willing to face them?
Well, okay, so the structure is the daily nightmare. We've posted nightmares that people have, and then we've used that as fodder for what we turn into quick shivers. So we've asked people to use their own nightmares or to take a story from the site and revise it and make it, you know, make it their own. We consider these the nightmares that we post, you know, to be in the Creative Commons. So we're not holding copyright to these nightmares, right? Because they are so universal. So it's kind of like a prompt and an opportunity to start with an idea and then see where you want to take it. So our initial volume was, you know, people we knew closer to home. We're members of the Great Lakes Association of Horror Writers. So several of our, you know, colleague, friend writers submitted to that. But one of the great things about making a publication is, you know, once you start announcing your call for submissions, you get stuff from all over the world.
Oh, yeah.
You know, right? So from Australia and the UK and the Caribbean. And it makes the world seem so connected when someone you've never heard of is sending you a story hoping you're gonna consider it.
Yeah, right. And then for the third volume, when we focused on nightmares about bugs, we went to other people who are specialists in different sorts of things and asked them to submit an essay. So we have an essay in there from a film theorist from Edmonton.
Mm-hmm.
Who else is in that one? I can't remember.
A woman who was writing her dissertation about the giant bug movies of the 1950s.
Who we just happened to meet. And I said, oh my God, the chapter you have about the 1950s bug movies, I would love to have that in this book.
We met a guy with an interest in ecology who wrote about the beauty of maggots. That was fun.
Yeah, about how they serve up. Yeah, anyway, so that was great fun to sort of expand. I mean, because, yeah, bugs are almost by definition creepy. Folks don't like them.
Or spiders. A lot of people have a fear of spiders.
For sure.
Yeah. And somebody wrote one of the ones about a computer virus, a computer bug.
Yeah.
That was actually one of those.
Yeah, one of my favorite
pieces in that whole volume. But
Yeah, a different way to think about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what is it about horror, about getting scared that we enjoy? Because obviously there's an enjoyment of it, too. People gathering around a campfire to hear a good ghost story or watching a movie. What is it about horror that we're attracted to?
Yeah, there's that whole sense of thrill, isn't it? You know, that it's like and also it's cool that it's part about being thrilled, I think. The sense that, you know, your adrenaline goes, and that's a very pleasant sensation. You feel very, all your senses are heightened. You're fully present, being alive.
Okay.
And it's enjoyable, especially because you know it's not happening. You know, that giant bug is not actually attacking your city right now.
Okay.
It's just a story about it.
What do you think is that element that makes something scary?
Oh yeah, I'm a huge fan of like the unexpected, of mm-hmm. things that are okay. radically, like, ontologically unexpected.
Okay.
You know, so that's why I'm not a huge fan of like the highly genreized horror stuff. Like, mm-hmm. if you know how a zombie's supposed to act, how can you really be too afraid of it? It's that thing. Like, it's the first 2/3 of any ghost movie. You know, when you don't really know what that thing is, mm-hmm. that's
my favorite
part.
The unknown is scary, then.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Gotcha.
The unknown, the unexpected, when people or situations don't behave in the way that you expect them to, what you're looking for isn't there. Those things are scary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And exciting and thrilling, not knowing.
Each of you take a turn at this. What's your worst nightmare? Tell us a scary story.
Yeah, you know, that's been one of the things that's fun about, like, writing down my own nightmares to put on the website. And we do, you know, anonymize them a bit. But sometimes, like, when I read them, I remember the nightmares so clearly. So usually for me, it's something about, like, being separated from people, like my family, that there's, you know, something going on that's getting in the way, and I've lost children, or I've lost my home, or I've lost Jim. Like, I just can't find him in whatever, you know, future world I find myself, or other world. And that's...
Oh, that's kind of sweet.
Aw.
I know, right?
But yeah, I mean, those are things that I'm really afraid of too.
What about you, Jim?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I have various recurrent nightmares, and one of them that I actually love, it's the dream where I'm running.
Yeah.
At some point in any either I'm running towards something or I'm running after something, and I realize in the dream that if I just got down on all fours, I'd be able to run a lot faster. I get down on all fours and I sort of transform into a wolf or a bear or something else. And there's that just sort of horrible realization of, what are you doing? that I'm really not who I thought I was, kind of thing.
Interesting. So have either of you ever gotten into a dream interpretation, gone the next step to figure out what your nightmare means?
A little bit. I mean, we talk about nightmares a lot, you know, and sometimes I've puzzled them out to try and figure out what they mean.
Yeah.
But there's always like so many possibilities.
Yeah.
You know, is depending on the slant that you want to take on your nightmare, you know, or if you hand it to someone else to think about, they're going to come up with a different interpretation than you.
I think that's where those encyclopedias of dream elements and what they mean don't really work, because I think things mean different things to each
right.
of us. And
yeah.
You probably have to sit there and just kind of meditate on it and figure, what
sure.
does this mean to me? How does this make me feel?
Yeah.
Although Janice's grandma used to use those.
My grandma used dream books. Like mm-hmm. what you could get at the corner store.
Yeah, yeah.
And you would have a dream, and then you'd look up a number, and it would tell you what number to play on the lottery.
And she, like, consistently
did it work?
Great with that, yeah.
Really?
She was a very lucky woman. Yeah, she was really lucky. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, but I have done a little bit of research into different interpretations of dreams. The Jungian collective unconscious stuff, to I have a whole set of friends who view dreams as, like, past life content.
Okay.
And it's all really, really fascinating, because when you're in a dream, it's not something else. It's you're right there, you know, and that's it's interesting that folks find that such a wellspring to different kinds of reflection, mm-hmm. you know, like who they are, where what they're doing.
Well, and your dreams do have like an impact, right? You can have a really great dream and you wake up in a good mood.
Exactly.
Or a really terrible dream and you wake up in a terrible mood. Or, you know, have sensations or feelings that carry over into the day. And that's a strange thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
You also do something called weird date nights.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Janice and I do, yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. We're sort of like Gomez and Morticia Adams as far as like stuff we like to do.
We like to think we are.
Yeah. Well, like a suburban version, a working class version of Morticia and Gomez.
And tell me about Impy.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So for a couple of years, for Daily Nightmare, we wanted a...
mascot, an icon.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's the painting The Nightmare by Fuseli. Mm-hmm. And that's in the Detroit Institute of Art. Go see the Detroit Institute of Art if you're anywhere near Detroit.
Yeah.
It's incredible. Even if you don't know the painting, you've probably seen the image. It's a woman on a bed with this like gargoyle sitting on her stomach. And that was originally how they thought nightmares were. So the MP is that guy, that guy sitting on the stomach.
Uh-huh.
And he's kind of your award on short horror films. Is that how
So we sponsored an award at something called Three Corpse Circus. It was a
local film festival, horror film festival.
But okay. it drew mm-hmm. from films around the world. Mm-hmm. But they were short horror films.
Right.
And so we sponsored. We gave that and $250 to the best short horror film made in
the Midwest.
Yeah, by anybody touching one of the Great Lakes.
Mm-hmm.
So and that was great fun. You know, mm-hmm. just like it was great fun talking with an artist to make that statue.
Mm-hmm.
It was
Jim commissioned it from an artist in Dearborn, and he did a great job. It's a beautiful little statue.
Yeah.
Is it the same one that shows up on the cover?
Yeah, exactly.
The anthologies. Yeah.
But also giving those awards and getting to meet filmmakers and we've made a point of going to see them in person because, you know, not everybody can come to a small film festival. So
yeah.
We went to Chicago to meet the first filmmaker.
Right. Daniel Purgatorio.
Uh-huh. And that was cool. Interview him in his office. And then the second filmmaker is from Columbus. Is Jason Tustevin.
Yeah.
And
we went down there. Yeah, it was great. It was because when folks are excited about doing stuff, that's the other thing we sort of like. We try to celebrate Midwest highbrow horror too. You know, so folks who are excited about doing that stuff,
mm-hmm. making something, creating something, doing something,
in the flyover state kind of thing.
Yeah, because we do get you know overlooked here in the Midwest. But yeah, it's been really cool to like meet these people, hear about their projects, see their work.
Yeah.
As Jim likes to note, it only takes like a little bit of effort to support someone else's art, to like encourage them. You know, it means so much
to have
people read your stuff or see your stuff. And it's not hard to do. You know, so that's another thing. Like on our website, we try to write about things that we can celebrate, that we can say something good about. Because there's a lot of criticism and there's a lot of negativity.
Yeah.
And if you're going to take the time to write a review, it should be about what you like about the thing.
Yeah. We run a YouTube channel too. And
I was just going to ask you about that. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So, mm-hmm. and the shtick is seriously, don't send me anything for free. I want to buy it. Cause if you've done it, you deserve to be paid for it because I might not like it. If I like it, I'll post a review. I'm not going to post a review if I don't like it because,
okay.
There's too much negativity, I think, you know? And I love the sense of delight and wonder at discovering something new and crazy and mm-hmm. and well done when mm-hmm. you know people striving after high ideals mm-hmm. even making things scary mm-hmm. scary creepy little things
mm-hmm. Yeah, and you asked about weird date night, and that's you know some of the things we've written reviews on. We've been to Theater Bazaar in Detroit the last couple of years, and that's a really you know transient kind of experience, but not everyone gets to go there or might even think they'd like it, so we've written about that, and we've shared photos about that mm-hmm. and film clips.
We've had mm-hmm. our faces cast in alginate, you know, in that made plastic casts of our faces so we could make mm-hmm. form-fitting prosthetic masks.
Uh-huh.
And that was a total hoot.
That was truly weird and truly creepy. But
I bet.
We did it together and it really stands out as an experience. I'm glad we did.
Yeah, right.
Uh-huh.
You've also co-authored a poetry collection, Till Death, Marriage
Poems. That just came out this year. We're uh-huh. so excited about that. Yeah.
So tell me what are these poems about?
Oh wow.
Till death.
So it's a collection of poems. Literally it's about the other, it's about fighting and making up, you know. It's the darker sides of marriage.
Uh-huh.
It's broadly in horror poetry because we don't pull any punches about how horrible and real and marriage can be, but we've been together for like 35 years.
Yeah. We go way back. So yeah, we, a couple years ago, we sort of came up with the idea of this collection and started looking at things we'd written together over the time we've been together, which is a long time.
Yeah.
And thinking about like, well, what would it take to make a collection of these poems and where would we need to fill in the gaps? And so it was a really collaborative effort from the start. What areas of this collection need more poems?
Yeah.
What could a subject be?
I challenge you to write a poem about whatever.
So we did sort of dare each other and sometimes honestly like fought about this collection. Like you said you were gonna write that poem and you haven't done it yet.
Well, I'll show you.
So and we worked really differently in our writing process. So we both have written poetry and other things, you know, all our lives. But this was more like writing a draft and at a really early stage, showing it to the other person and letting them you know, take it and tear it apart and redirect it and revise it.
Now that's scary.
Yeah.
There was a great
if marriage
intimacy.
Can survive revision, then you've got a strong thing going on.
Exactly.
But it was really cool to write it together and really so satisfying to finish it, you know, to like, ta-da. And then we had a blast working with our editor too.
Stephanie Wojtowicz from Raw Dog Screaming Press. She was very, very insightful on things that that neither of us saw.
Right. And so some of our poems, you know, she would say like, this doesn't go far enough. Or, you know, how can you make this stronger? How could you end this differently? Or I just love this. And that was just like so flattering to be so closely read and then to be so encouraged to work really hard.
Good writers know the value of a good editor.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we're really, really pleased with that collection and super, super happy to have like done that, you know?
And
like,
we're working on our next collection too.
Mm-hmm. We are.
What will that be?
It's called The Poison Garden.
Ah.
Because just the whole notion of nourishment and poison. Janice and I also have, we've gardened together.
Our entire married life, yes.
Yeah. So it's a vegetable garden, but it's also the notion of poisons and visions and, anyways, it's still in progress, but we're having a blast with that one too.
We're excited about that.
The whole sense of tending together kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.